You are listening to Punk News Podcast, episode 555. No long, drawn-out intro this week because we got stuff to talk about, baby. And we're back at the Punk News Podcast 555. We're not going to do mail this week because we've got lots to talk about. You can always use that podcast at punknews.org. I did get the email from Bobby Loesch and some other people. Bobby, I will play your song next week. But this week we got stuff to talk about. We're not going to spend a whole lot of time in the intro because we've got lots of stuff to talk about. Hallie Bullet, am I wasting time by saying that we have things to talk about, but they're not actually talking about them, and instead saying that we think have things to talk about instead? Hallie Bullet, go ahead and answer.
It's so much news. Let's just get to it.
And more, are you ready to rock with the news?
Let's rock with the news.
Oh, actually, though, I can't do it because I wanted to bring some. I saw Sloppy Seconds. I saw Sloppy Seconds last Sunday, and it was the third show I've been to since quarantine started. The first one was an outdoor cat bite show, like basically a community like gardening center sort of. So, I mean, it was like basically your uncle's Grateful Dead tribute band kind of thing, you know, with Cat Bite. And that was cool. The second show I went to was Cat Bite's indoor record release show, which was cool. And then I went and saw Sloppy Seconds. Some fans, which are very intelligent, and some which are just drunk punks. During the set, basically the rule was is you had to show proof of vaccine and you had to wear a mask. They didn't ask for proof of vaccine at all, and I would say 60% of people were wearing masks, 40% of people weren't. But it kind of doesn't make any sense. I mean, I'm all for wearing masks inside, but they're serving drinks, so people are pulling off their masks standing around. So what's the point? I mean, I don't get what the mask does if you're just pulling off every 5.5 seconds to take a drink, you know? Sloppy Seconds themselves were awesome. I would say normally I'm a big fan of Moderate Danger at a show. You know, not real danger, but Moderate Danger is all right. But because of COVID, I don't know. Like people were moshing. People were kind of doing the thing where they run up to you and like grab on you, which is in the COVID era. I don't know. Maybe not as cool. You know, not that it was ever cool, but you know, this one drunk street punk. He kept jumping up on stage and he wasn't wearing pants, but he had on bright red briefs and he kept like wiggling his ass and it was funny the first time, but not times 2 through 6. You know, another punk, like another. Really
You're sure it didn't just get funnier and funnier? Because it sounds like it potentially could have just gotten funnier and funnier.
Well, yeah, I have been known to be in a bad mood for no reason. So maybe I was in a bad mood for no reason. Although I did enjoy the show. Sloppy Seconds was great. They did almost everything from Destroyed and select hits. You know, You Can't Kill Joey Ramone. You've Got a Great Body, But Your Record Collection Sucks. The Candyman. All those hits. They were great. They sounded great, too. But during the show, some really tall street punk surfed, crowd surfed, and he hit the ceiling fan with his boots and almost came down, which normally would have been cool. But in the COVID era, I don't know. I felt people were being a little reckless, but maybe I'm just shell-shocked, and maybe I should be a little bit more chill. I don't know. I don't think anybody knows.
Nobody knows.
Yeah. So anyways, let's do some news. Here's something I hate. Sorry, buddy. I hate it. The copyrights have released a new song. It's going to be on Fat – a new album. They're putting out a new album. It's going to be on Fat Records. The new album is called Alone in a Dome. It's out October 22nd on Fat Records. The new track was called Halos, and the Punk News community commenters uniformly absolutely love this. They're raving about this. They are super excited about this. Some people that have even said, oh, I was on the fence about them, but now I'm a huge fan. I can't wait to hear this. I hated it. Hallie Bullet, you want me to talk about how much I hated it, or do you want to kick it off?
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
I'm sure the copyrights are nice, guys, and this isn't anything personal. And I keep going back and forth. It's like, do people want to hear my honest opinion about bands, and should I say something that I generally dislike? Or should I be kind of cool and be like, hey, it's not for me? The problem is when you're always like, hey, it's not for me, that's not that interesting of a conversation. People want to hear your opinion, you know? But the problem is when you give your opinion, that can hurt people's feelings. And I'm not trying to hurt copyright's feelings. And I'm a sensitive person. I know if someone's like said, you know, the Legend of a Crackbook sucks, it would probably annoy me a little bit, but except it wouldn't now. Because thank you, listeners and readers, for buying the Legend of a Crackbook. The praise has been uniformly through the roof. I'm psyched. So thank you for ordering and reading the Legend of a Crackbook. I am so psyched about that. Like, honestly, people, like if you're a listener, you are helping. If you're a leftover Crackbook reader, you are literally helping my lifelong dream come true. I've been working towards this my entire life. It happened. It's been great, and people are digging it. And honestly, I thought it was going to be a warfare when it came out. But people have been loving it, so thank you very much, readers and listeners and whoever else checked it out. If you haven't checked it out, you can still check it out, Rare Bird Lit. Anyways, the point being,
it's so great. My copy just arrived in the mail. I was like so psyched to just hold it. It's so impressive, dude. It's just so impressive. I don't have that, you know, I don't have like that many books in my collection that just like have my friend's name on them. You know, it's just a cool fucking thing.
Well, I am honored. Thank you very much. I really do appreciate that. And thank you to M. And I genuinely mean that. And more, thank you for ordering a book and reading it too. Thanks to everybody. I mean, I'm thrilled. What else can I say? I'm going to do like an Instagram post saying thanks to everybody. I'm thrilled. So thank you to everyone that got one. Like, I really am thrilled. And I'm psyched that people are digging it. We really did work really hard on it. And although it didn't feel like we worked. I mean, it felt like we worked a lot on it. And there was a lot of chaos and tumult behind the scenes. But it didn't feel like hard work. It just felt like, I don't know, stuff to get done. You know what I mean? I don't know. Like, when you're at the record store and you're flipping through records and you're not buying most of them, that's not hard work. I don't know. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. You know, anyways, I'm thrilled. Anyway, the copyrights. I'm sure the nice guys, I hated this song. And here's why I hated it. I really did hate it. And everyone loves it. Like, to me, this sounds like radio rock. It's not challenging. It's not dangerous. It sounds specifically, here's music that you're familiar with that won't challenge you or make you try to feel anything. It's rice. It's noodles. It's a staple that you can consume. And it'll just fill you up. Not with anything. It'll just be comforting in that it's something you've heard before. And there's no danger to it whatsoever. And I will say, like, if you listen to, like, Lynyrd Skynyrd, like, Lynyrd Skynyrd has, like, edgier sounding guitars and lyrics than this. Lynyrd Skynyrd. And Lynyrd Skynyrd is not a punk band. And so I'm like, how have we gotten so far from, like, The Germs or X-Ray Specs or even Bow Wow Wow, you know, kind of, like, edgy, clever, weird concepts. And this, it's like, this is just... It's based on the Ramones, but like the Ramones have like Beat on the Brat, Blitzkrieg Bop, you know, He's Gonna Kill That Girl, kind of these songs, 53rd and 3rd, like these powerful cracking guitars, kind of. And the interesting thing about the Ramones is they got some nasty songs, but some love songs too, and that's what's interesting. It feels like to me this is all comfort and it's all designed not to agitate you and not challenge you or push you or even make you feel. It's just designed to fill you up with what you already want, and that's why I hate it. And everyone else, all the commenters loved it, which is the exact reason why so many commenters dislike me at the site. It's because we have this fundamental different perception of what punk can and should be. And that's the truth. Hallie Bullet, copyright. Love it, hate it, think it was okay.
Well, like, full disclosure, they are friends of mine. So, like, I, you know... So I, you know, it's like I look at this and I see people that have just worked so freaking hard and who never, like, I don't know. It's like there's something admirable about that. Like, they just never stopped playing the same kind of pop punk. And like, you know, I think it's cool for people that have been just at it for this long to like be able to put out a record on Fat and be able to like have the fans flip out about it. I'm happy for them. It's cool. They just, you know, they deserve it. Like, do I personally want to listen to this song on repeat? I don't, you know, I'm kind of with you. It's like, it's, it just didn't grab me. And, you know, it's like, it is funny, you know, this, you know, and I played in pop punk and people probably leveled the same criticisms towards my band. So I think it's okay for me to dish it out. But like, I just think like, you know, it is kind of Ramones core, but I don't think the Ramones would have liked this kind of music. It just, you know, it's like you said, it is like a little bit maybe easy, but I don't know, like in a way, like I don't know. Who cares? Like, I'm psyched for them. Like, people love this. They go nuts at their shows. Like, it doesn't matter if I like it. They're just like a band doing what they do. And like, they're still so sweet. They still like book shows for anyone that wants to come through town. And like, I don't know. I think it's cool. I think it's cool and I'm proud of them. And maybe, and I should probably just listen to the song a few more times and make sure that there's not just something in it that I missed in my like sort of perfunctory listening of it before we recorded tonight. But yeah, I don't know. It's like, I'm psyched to see people psyched for them. But I know what you're saying, John, with there just being like there definitely is a rift just in terms of like, what is punk? What is it? You know, like I've sort of swung back to feeling like it should feel kind of dangerous and that it should be challenging. But like, that's, you know, those are like big words for me to say, because that's not actually, you know, I don't think that the music that I did in the genre was like, I mean, I'm whatever. I don't want to make it about me.
Never criticizing a band ever again.
Oh my God. Oh, come on. I'm with you. I think, I think you touched on like on something when you compared it to you and your book. You said that like the book has been successful enough that you can like, you could take some negative comments. Like, you don't care. Like, you understand that the general consensus is that people are really enjoying the book. And I think that that's true for the copyrights too. They feel that people are happy for them. They're happy to be having like success and a record on Fat. That's probably something that like 20 years ago they would have like absolutely died to have happen for them. So the fact that they just kept like nose to the grindstone like all these years and they get that, but like I don't think that they would mind you criticizing it or saying that it you don't like it. I don't you know what I'm saying, because they have enough success and like not everybody's gonna like everything, and like you should say if you don't like it, and you should say if you don't think it's not punk, and like I think that's like, we're allowed to say what we want. And like, I don't think they're not like crybabies that are going to like hear about that and like be upset about it. Like, they're not, you know, I don't know. Say your fucking opinions. People want to hear them. It's like why you run a site and why you have a podcast. Like, say what you think. And it doesn't all have to be nice.
I hate the copyrights. Well, actually, John, that they're my best friends. I just hung out with them yesterday. I will say.
No, listen, that is not like that. It's not like that.
Unwittingly, I did listen to a copyrights record yesterday, and I loved it all the way through. Kepi and the Copyrights Reanimation Festival, which I forgot was the copyrights. I did enjoy that record, although I'm still confused by it. Why did they just re-record a Groovy Ghoulies record that wasn't hard to begin with? I'd rather have them do a live set or something. And why did they not call it Reanimation Festival instead of just Reanimation Festival? and more, what do you think of this track? And what, can you explain to me why Kepi and the Copyrights just re-recorded an entire Groovy Ghoulies album? I don't understand. It's a good album. I like it. But why? I don't understand. It sounds the same, you know?
I don't know. Oh, my gosh. No, wait. Copyrights. They did it to avoid copyright?
Ooh,
it has to be somewhere in that. So I've heard of the band. I've never listened to the band before, you know, doing stuff for the podcast. Just because I understand why people like it, but it wasn't really something. I was like, yes, I'm going to rush out and listen to it. So anyway, so I listened to this with an open mind, because it was like, let's see, you know, might be like the biggest fan, just have to give it a go. I wasn't the world's biggest fan of it. I did find it kind of boring and a bit generic. But that said, like, the band sound good, you know, like they sound good. And I understand, like, I get kind of the comfort food of bands sort of like vibe, and I think that's great. I was really surprised at all of the, well, in one way I was really surprised at all of the hype for it, because I thought it was going to be something a little different, but it is good to see like people who have been at it for so long still able to generate that amount of hype and excitement and stuff. So like, good for them. And you know, it's good that they're bringing joy and happiness into people's lives. you know, but Yeah, that was my take on it. Again, I don't know if I'm going to say that and then I'm going to get super into them or anything, because like that was sort of the thing. Like, I didn't listen to the Lawrence Arms for the longest time. Then on the podcast, Adam recommended a song. I checked that out and kind of fell down that like hole of music. I haven't listened to them for a while, but like, you know, they're really good. So now it's like, is this going to happen with this band? I don't know. But yeah.
Copyright's taking some hard hits on the Punk News podcast tonight. But listen, he's a band that took some hard hits on the website, but not in my own personal standpoint. Surfport have released a new song, and no one really knows what's Surfport released the killer album, Friendship Music, back in 2019. Since then, they've put out like three digital EPs, but I don't think maybe like 1/7-ish or something. But it seems unclear as to what their next step is going to be. It almost seems like they're just doing songs just to do songs, which of course a band never does, just records music just to record music. Anyway, they released a new track, and it also had a video. The track is called White Claw, Enema Bong Hit, and right now it seems to be just a standalone digital single. And technically, the video is the demo version of the song, and the studio version of the song has never been released. But the band has released demo versions of songs that have never had studio versions ever, I mean, later on. So that does raise the question of, what is a demo? Like, if you release a demo without the studio, is it no longer a demo? You know?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Then I don't think it's the demo. It's just the recording.
Yeah, right. then the first question is, can a demo traverse from being a demo to being the final product? You know? Or if you put something out for public consumption and call it a demo, is it still a demo, or is it not a demo even though it's called a demo? Or if you record it with the intention of it being a demo, but then decided to make it the actual thing because it's so good, such as the first off record, is it still a demo? You see, you know.
I mean, like, what if you had put out your book like the way it is, like packaged and like with like, you know, with Rare Bird and like every, just the way it is, but you were like, well, but it's only a first draft. Like, people would be like, well, what? Like, you're not ever going to do another draft, are you? The book's already out. So yeah, I don't know. Maybe they're planning on doing something else with it, but you're saying in the past they've like put out stuff that was, they said was demos, and then they never did another like more definitive studio version of it.
They've got an entire EP that's called the Something Demos. And they never did other versions of the songs. And they sound basically like your studio songs, you know, so.
But it can't be. The whole definition of a demo is that it's like, it's like. I don't think. Yeah. Okay. This is very confusing. I think it's very funny. I'm kind of into it.
Well, that brings up the greater point with Surfport. There's a lot to take apart with Surfport, but that brings up the greater point. There is, or definitely was, major label money behind Surfport, because they were signed, and maybe still are signed, to Julia Casablanca's label, which essentially is a subsidiary of a major label. And so, is this whole thing with the demo phraseology and the videos that are supposed to look kind of cheap, but they're actually really expensive, is it all part of the big manipulation, or is it just a band kicking ass? I will say I dig the song. I like how purposely grimy the video looks. It's almost too grimy, but almost. It's not too grimy. It's on the edge of being too grimy, and I dug it. And I like how savage and self-destructive it is. And I like how negative and depressed this band is. And you know, with the copyrights, they're like, we're all having fun. We're at the finish line. Boys, here we are. And Surfboard is like, you should go do White Claw enema bongs and destroy your frat house, and you know, because I'm depressed. Like, that's the song, you know, which I find much more compelling art wise. I don't even know why. Emore, Surfboard, where a lot, you know, very controversial band. And the other question is, well, is the party over? Because when the first album came out, they were kind of a buzz band, but now we're past the initial buzz of the first album. So what is there for Surfboard to do? And not to drag this out, I would sort of give Surfboard credit in the same way I would give Hanson credit. You know, Hanson came out with Mbop and it was a gigantic hit. And then they put out another album and no one cared, but Hanson's still making music. So I'm like, you know what, Hanson? Good for you. It shows that even though you had like this massive hit, you're really just in it for the music, and you happen to have a hit, you know? And so if Surfboard is still doing music after the buzz has died down from being this controversial band, maybe they are a totally legit band, even though they had some strings behind them to begin with. Emore, unpack this baggage for us.
Okay. Well, yeah, like, that's kind of the thing. Like, are they going to do something, like, big and kind of flashy to announce something? Like, is this just, like, laying low and kind of waiting? But, again, that doesn't really make a lot of sense because you want to get as many, like, eyes on your stuff as possible. So, yeah, I think it's they're making music with people they want to make music with, and it's the music they want to make. Like, you know, again, I don't think many, well, I don't think any, anyone but them would write White Claw Enema Bong Hit. You know, I don't think.
True.
So, you know, that's a plus. Like, that's great. So I think they should keep making music if they, you know, if they've lost some of the initial buzz. Like, they have fans. They have people who like them. They have people who are watching them. And they have people that will support them. And, you know, I think that even if they didn't have people supporting them, they'd still be making stuff. Because I really do think it's, you know, it's time to... this is how we want to express ourselves. This is what we want to do. This is what, you know, that's it. So, yeah, I think they're doing it for the right reasons. They're in it for the music, and that's all. I love the song. I love the video. The whole thing's just great. And, yeah, just never stop covering them because they're awesome.
I think the readers hated this. The commenters... unanimously hated this. Hallie Bullitt, did you hate this?
No, I loved it. But I don't have a sense of, like, all of this stuff that you were saying about Julian Casablancas. Like, I didn't know any of that. Like, I don't know this band outside of the context of, like, you and you liking them and you putting them in front of my face every now and then, which I'm really grateful for because I think they're awesome. I just, like, don't have a sense of, like, how big are they? Like, do people, or you're saying they're a little bit past the buzz?
Well, that's the thing, is how big are they? Because up until before COVID, they would only play tiny shows, but those shows would sell out in 10 minutes. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It was like, artificial, or maybe not even artificial, what's the word, supply and demand, or however you want to phrase that, but go ahead.
Yeah, I think this stuff is really cool. It reminded me, you know, because I was reading a little bit more about the video, which I thought was great. And they said that it was partially inspired by the band's what did I read? It says partially inspired by the band's disbelief at kids who thought they were invincible during the COVID pandemic, partying with abandon as the virus killed literally hundreds of thousands across the country and millions worldwide. But it reminded me, I felt like this saw it. It felt very full circle to me because it reminded me of, do you remember when we talked about, I don't know if you were on this episode, but John, we talked about those, like, I feel like they were like YouTube stars that had, like, rented that house in LA and were just partying, like, out of control and, like, pissing off the entire neighborhood and just, like, putting their middle finger up at, like, every single COVID safety precaution. And I was like, oh, that's, like, who they wrote the song for. It's like for the like kids like that, you know? And I thought the video was great. I liked that the singer was in drag. I thought for listeners, I guess, right, we should explain the video a little bit, right? It just sort of, like, parodies that, like, sort of, like, really extreme, like, partying, like, bro skater culture. And the singer, who I think identifies as a woman, right, you guys?
Yes.
Yeah. So she is dressed as like a, what did she said she was going for a harsh, judgmental skate dude at the park vibe is what she said. And I don't know. I thought it was interesting and cool. I don't know why. I don't know why commenters have to, like, again, it's like, it's,
I
not
know why.
Talking
I know.
About it. It's yeah. this
I know exactly
that we always have, which is, like, why do people need to spend so much time saying that they don't like something? Like, well,
isn't that what I just did with the copyrights? but you're not just
online, like, making comments about how you hate things. You're doing it on a platform where people have literally tuned in to hear what you're saying about stuff. It's different to me. To me, there's a real difference. Okay, sorry, I cut you off. Go on.
Well, actually, I cut you. I was just jumping and beat people out of the conversation. Like, here's what I have to say. Anyways, I know exactly why the commenters don't like this. There's one exact reason why. Do you know why?
Because it's a woman who's not pretty singing songs that a song that's not pretty.
Because Danny Miller isn't going to be their girlfriend. That's the exact reason why. Like, literally, that's it. That's it. You know, like, for real. For real.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So, anyways, here's something that I didn't hate. I liked it. I didn't love it, but I generally liked it, much to my own surprise. Big D and the Kids Table, they've got a new single out. The new single is called New Day. It's off their upcoming album, Do Your Art, out on October 22nd via Side One Dummy. Huh? What? Huh? What? Well, that's not the point. Listener, I'm as astounded as you are. Side One W is apparently back in full force. Like, what? Anyway, that's not the point of this conversation. The point of this conversation is Big D and the Kids Table. It's a ska or ska-ish band that's been around 26 years, and they released kind of a, I don't want to say a generic ska song, but a standard melodic ska song that honestly sort of reminded me of Madness or Mid-Era Madness, if you will. It's called New Day. And it's very radio friendly, but I didn't hate it. I thought it was kind of a good poppy song. I didn't love it. I'm not going to rush out and buy it. But if I heard this on the radio, I would not change the channel. I would snap my fingers. I thought the only thing is to me, this one song though is like, I feel like it's three songs jammed together. Like the chorus kind of starts, and then it kind of starts, and then it kind of starts, and there's no real chorus. I'm like confused as to where the actual song is. But that being said, I kind of liked it. I thought it was good, and not all modern ska is terrible and needs to be destroyed. Just most of it. Hallie Bullet, what do you think?
Like, I should just put like the little quotation marks like under what you said. Like, that was totally my take on it. I liked it. I liked it so much better than I thought I would. I thought it was like, but also I thought it had like they had sections of it that reminded me kind of like an 80s like Jay Giles band kind of vibe. Like the his voice and the way he was laying down like the harmony, there was something very like centerfold, like all those Jay Giles band like 80s hits. It kind of reminded me of those vibes, which I'm super super into. And then sort of there'd be like another section that seemed like a little bit more like Smash Mouth to me, which I was like not as into. And the video I thought was just sort of like nothing to get excited about. Yeah. But I liked this song. I would listen to this again. I thought it was cool. Em, did you like this?
It was okay. it was okay. It's the funnest breakup song I've heard because it's nice and uplifting and it's like, oh, you know, you get to fall in love again and, you know, this guy treated you bad and now you can do this and this is exciting. Like, that was nice. Like, that was kind of fun and cool. At the beginning where there's like the ta-da thing, it was like, oh, what is going to happen next? What's the song going to be? But yeah, no, I thought it was good. I thought it was much longer than it actually was. Like, you know, when you're listening to something and it's like, well, this is about like 3.5 minutes. It felt like 5 minutes. And I don't mean that. I don't mean that like in a bad way. I just mean like it felt like a longer song than it was. So I don't know if it was just I was more invested in the lyrics or what happened, but it seemed to go by like at kind of a not fast, but not in a bad way. So yeah, and then the video, it's nice and bright and it's the band hanging out and drinking, and there's lots of, they're hanging out with friends and there's Vespas and like other types of scooters, and that was kind of neat. So yeah, I was kind of like, I wasn't sure what the video was going to be because I was like, oh, is he going to be like, is he going to try to get with the main like woman they focus on? I'm glad he didn't. I'm glad it was kind of nice and, you know, just fun.
I will say that perhaps in contrast to some other modern Scottish bands, while it is a lovey-dovey song, it's kind of an adult lovey-dovey song and not like a 14-year-old's lovey-dovey song. On a related note, I interviewed Peter Wolf, lead singer of Jay Giles' band, once. Hallie Bullet, do you think he was a dick or do you think he was cool?
Oh man, I'm so I'm gonna be so upset if you. Just the fact that you asked that makes me feel like you might have been a dick.
Cool as hell.
Mega oh cool. Yes. Okay, I was gonna be so disappointed. Thank goodness. Okay, was, love it.
He was the man. Like honestly, like Jay Giles Band is not as even in 2006 or seven. They weren't at the height of their career, but Jay Giles Band are legitimate rock stars. And honestly, most true rock stars, not all, but most. Or at least ones that have been around for a long time, they're usually pretty cool. Like Joan Jett, Lemmy, Peter Wolf, all super cool, you know?
Yeah.
David Johansen, cool, you know? So
I love it. That's great to hear.
Listen, here's a band that's been around a long time, The Specials. They're putting out their second album featuring the return of lead singer – oh, I forgot his name, the main Special singer that was not on their third album. I'll get to that in a minute. Anyways, they're putting out a new album. It's called Protest Songs, 1924 to 2012. Chumbawamba did it. and it's them covering a bunch of protest songs. They released one single called Freedom Highway. And, of course, Jerry Damrosch, who hasn't been in the band since the third album, isn't on it at all. And so are people excited about this? The Specials have a lot of – people think of The Specials having like three albums, but they actually have like almost a dozen. But most of them are kind of just like – I don't want to say throwaway albums, but albums that, you know, don't have a whole lot of that didn't really make an impact. Terry Hall is that. And as a side note, if you want to hear a crazy story, read the story of Terry Hall. It is crazy and not in a good way.
Just like what? Like his life story?
Well, he's spoken about it, so I'll say it is – when he from like the ages of like 10 to like 14, like he was a what do you call it? A sex captive. Like they kept him as like a sex thing. Like it's crazy. Like the fact that he could emerge from that as a singer and like not be like, you know, in a mental institution for the rest of his life is quite commendable. You know?
Yeah. Oh, that's wretched.
Human trafficking, that's what it is.
Yeah. You know? Oh, hey, Jesus.
Crazy. Anyway, so on that happy note, now I feel bad talking about the record. I like The Specials. I've seen them live. Terry Hall's a great singer. Hooray, The Specials. Hooray, Specials. I see you like Frank Zappa and the Talking Heads. I like those guys, too.
When is the last time you saw The Specials play?
Punk Rock Bowling Asbury Park, so 2017, I think.
Yeah, I think that's around... I feel like that's around the time that they played South by Southwest. So that would have been around when I saw them as well, or at least that was the last time I saw them. I thought it was a great show. What did you think?
Oh yeah, they're great live. They're
like
great
amazing, live. Still amazing. I went because I had seen them back in the 90s, and I was a little bit like, oh man, like should I just, you know, with bands sometimes you just wonder, should I just like leave my memories intact and just like those shows that I saw, should I just like have those be the way that I remember seeing The Specials? And then I don't know, I saw them all those years later, and I was like, I am loving this. I'm like absolutely loving this. I mean, as for this album, I thought that the track that I heard, I thought was like fine, interesting. It didn't make me totally believe with confidence that I will, you know, pick up this album and listen to the whole thing. But I don't know. I think it's I was embarrassed at how few of these songs I knew. I don't know if I would know more of them if I heard them. I don't know if it was just that I know some of these songs and I just wasn't recognizing the titles. But I am if they are cool protest songs that have maybe just sort of been lost to like the annals of time, then I'm sort of glad that they're shining a light on just these songs again. I think that would be cool and probably worth my, you know, probably worth my giving it a listen, you know? That was my take. I don't know.
And more. Will you be rushing out and buying the new Specials record?
I'll be listening to it for sure. I really like protest songs, and I like when people cover them and kind of not update them, but yeah, like kind of give them new life. Like, hey, you know, have you ever heard of Malvina Reynolds? No? Well, now you have, you know, like stuff like that. Because I was going through and it's like, oh, I know a few of these. And then it's like, I do not know who she is. And then I looked it up and the I'm Not Afraid to Fail in This World song. Or I listened to that one. And it was like, wow, that's really cool. That's kind of neat. So I'll definitely be checking it out. And yeah, like they're going to cover the Frank Zappa and Mothers of Invention. I think that's going to be really cool. The song they released, Freedom Road. That was I thought the cover was good. And I think it's interesting that they're choosing to do protest songs, because it's kind of like, is that like a commentary on what's happening now? Like, okay, you know, it's not as bad as it has been, but there's still like issues. There's still stuff that we need to focus on. There's still stuff we need to talk about. Like, is it to kind of put that in the forefront of people's minds and like, don't get complacent. We still have stuff we need to deal with. Like, there's still so much injustice. There's still so much, like discrimination and like systemic abuse, you know, is it kind of like trying to light a fire, or keep the fire lit under people so they continue to do things and continue to be like, okay, well, we can make the world better. We don't have to settle for like bad things still happening. We can try to move forward, or move forward all together in a positive light. So yeah, I'll definitely be checking them out.
Fun fact about the artist on the record, Chip Taylor and the New Ukrainians. Chip Taylor is actually, I think his name is Rod Voigt, brother of actor John Voigt and uncle of Angelina Jolie, FYI.
Oh, dude.
let's play a song. Who's got a song? And more. You got a song?
I do.
Let's hear it.
So this is from a Texas hardcore punk band called Amygdala. And it's off their upcoming split with Listless. So that's coming out in September. And the song is A Kind of Death in Life.
That was Amygdala, Texas hardcore. And let's talk about let's talk about something serious, actually. Okay, so the Bomb Pops are going on tour. Lead singer, one of the two lead singers or members, Polly Van Damme, will not be on tour. And here's the reason why she will not be on tour. She issued a statement. She said, "Hey, what's up? It's me, Polly. I have an announcement to make about the upcoming Bomb Pops tour with Bayside, Hawthorne Heights, and Senseless Fail. Unfortunately, I will not be joining my band on this one. In February of this year, I found out that there was going to be a baby on the way. But in May, I miscarried. To say that this was physically and emotionally exhausting is an understatement, but it made me realize right now that I need to focus on my health and my family. Being a type 1 diabetic, I've put my health on the back burner perhaps too often. There aren't any regrets, but it has become clear that I need to see this through. Life on the road is grueling to say the least, and I've had my fair share of close calls. Seizures, ambulances, hospitals, oh my. But without further ado, I'm so stoked to announce that the one and only Remington will be standing in for me on these shows, and the band is going to crush it out there. They have my support and well wishes 100%. I'm grateful they are willing to go out there and keep our songs alive. Thank you to everybody who has supported the band and my family throughout this journey. There's nothing more but epicness to come. See you all soon, Polly." The reason that this is very interesting from my standpoint is back in the day, any time prior to about 2010, when social media wasn't ubiquitous all the time, every time, you would go see a band and maybe somebody wouldn't be there. Leftover Crack is a great example. Sometimes Ezra would be there, sometimes he wouldn't. Sometimes Brad would be there, sometimes he wouldn't. Sometimes Aura would be there, and sometimes he wouldn't. And no one would really know why. And because, like, social media wasn't as powerful, people didn't even necessarily know every single member of the band or what they look like. And so it kind of like just was, if somebody couldn't go on tour, you didn't need to explain it or justify or bare your soul to the audience as to why you weren't going to be there. You just weren't there. And honestly, most people probably didn't even realize that anything was amiss. Although with one of the two front singers, someone might realize that, you know. But in the age of social media, when that happens, you kind of have to put out a post that says, I hate everybody, or I don't hate everybody, but we're still pals, but I can't go. And here's the exact reason why I can't go, my very personal story. Once in a while, I guess a band will say due to personal issues, and then everyone's like, oh, they've got alcohol problems, or they got, depression problems, or they got this, or they got that. And it's almost as bad as saying what the actual deeply personal thing is, because everyone guesses. So this is where we're at in 2021. How people is it a good thing that you can so openly communicate about honest things and hardships? Or are people forced to kind of tell stuff they probably really that the audience really isn't entitled to know?
Yeah, it's a really interesting thing you ask. I mean, I do think if it is the way you worded it, I think is interesting, where you feel that people feel obligated to maybe share information. I mean, you're sort of assuming that they're sharing information that they're not comfortable sharing.
True.
Which I'm sure probably happens sometimes. I think there is some of that because that people know that if they drop off a tour or if they quit a band or if they, they know that there's going to be speculation. And I think this is people just wanting to set the record straight. They don't want there to be speculation. They don't want they don't want people making up their own reasons for why this shit's happening. And so I think this performer is just saying this is what actually happened. I kind of admire too, I feel like especially, and this is sort of moving away from specifically the question you were asking, but I admire that she talks about miscarriage, because I feel like that is weirdly one of the few taboo things that we're just not supposed to really talk about much anymore. And I think that's changed a bit in the last few years, but I think it's I think they say 1 in 4 women or something is going to experience miscarriage in her life. So it's given it's this thing that's happening to women all the freaking time. I do like that she just sort of was, able to just say this is what's been going on with me. And I'm sure there are fans of hers that were reading that have either maybe experienced that or their partner has, and it maybe they were able to experience some sense of feeling less alone or something. So I don't know. I thought it was brave. I know that's an overused word, but I thought it was brave of her to just sort of put it out there. But I really do know what you're saying, John. And if it's if people feel like they just have to disclose everything about what's going on in their personal lives just to get out ahead of other possible incorrect rumors, then that seems unfair to people. And so I guess I hope that this was something that she really did feel that she wanted to share with fans, and not that she had to do it just sort of to protect herself from gossip, what I'm saying here? People.
Yeah, I do, but what can you do about it? I mean, I don't think, what can you do about it?
Hopefully there was something cathartic for her about just being this is who I am. This is what's really happening to me. If you're a fan of me, maybe you want to know what's going on with me. Hopefully it didn't feel for her, she had to, just sort of serve up info that she really wouldn't have shared otherwise. Em, when you quit the podcast, are you going to tell everybody every little personal reason why you had to quit? Are you gonna just keep it all close to the vest?
Or are you gonna start a second podcast with the Punk News podcast? It'll be like the two white snakes or whatever, and more Punk News podcast, or Punk News podcast AD or something.
I think it'll be a cryptic post that also is way too informative and a real it'll be Punk News podcast, but rebranded. It'll be the blue and the white will be reversed, it'll be crazy. Absolute just madness. I'm in the boat where if she chose to be open about this, that's that's amazing, and that's great. And you know, I admire people who do that, because like, if there's something that, or sometimes I find it's hard to like put yourself out there or talk about something personal with people who aren't like your family. So like, for her to do this and share very personal details of what she's been through, like, I think that's very admirable. I think if it wasn't her decision and she was forced to be like, hey, you know, here's my whole life, like, that really sucks and that shouldn't be. But it doesn't read like that. Like, it reads like it was her decision to share it and to talk about it. On her personal Instagram account, she has more or less the identical statement posted. So I thought that was kind of interesting too. It's like, it, you know, all the bases are covered, so to speak. So yeah, like, it in one way, I guess it's good because it shuts down like any rumors that might surface, like, oh no, were they, do they have a falling out, is something going on, you know, or anything like that. I think, like, maybe with COVID, people are trying to be, or have more open conversations around health and family, just because like, the virus has affected so much, and hopefully like, this has benefited like, her fans who have read it and been like, oh well, I've been through that too, or I also have that, or, you know, yeah, that is a good point, I should probably be taking better care of myself and stuff like that. So I think if it helps somebody, that's just an added bonus. But I think we're going to see more of this kind of stuff. I think there's going to be more personal stories and stuff like that.
Well, there you have it. And more, tell us about Sister Susie.
Yeah, okay. So Sister Susie, they are out of Edmonton, Alberta. And they are a glam rock band, but they're not just a glam rock band. They have some edge. So they just released a new EP, and it's called Don't Want To. So the EP is 3 songs long. And the 3 songs are like re-recordings of songs that were on their LP that was also called Don't Want To. And they have a new member now. They replaced, I think it was a drummer. So, all the songs are good. The second song is called Claws, and it's the most like punky of the songs. It's the shortest, and it has some real bite to it. And that was my favorite song out of off the EP. I thought it was all good. Like, it's neat. You should check it out. But, like, if you only check out one song, check out Claws, because I thought it was really good. So what did you guys think of Sister Susie?
I liked it. John, did you like it?
Yeah, I thought it was real good. Honestly, it reminded me a lot of Susie Quattro. I don't know if that's just because it's both Susies or because they both kind of do like that 70s glam rock with a bit of, you know, AM pop washed in. But I dug it a lot. I thought it was real good, honestly.
Yeah, it's like a really, yeah, it's like a cool sound. And they described, like, I guess it was like the first single, they described it as, I feel stupid because I didn't know this term. I'm now realizing that, like, Rancid, like, put out a, and we, I guess they described their first single as am I saying it right? Bover rock. Do you know what I'm talking about, John?
No, Bover Rock.
Bover Rock. Okay, so then I sort of, like, speaking of going down holes of, like, weird music, the weird corners of music, I was like, well, what do they mean by that? Like, what is Bover Rock? And that's, like, apparently, like, a very specific era of, like, glam rock that was, like, the stuff that was being played in, like, London pubs in, like, the 70s and maybe would have been popular with, like, punks, but also, like, football hooligans, but also, like, just, like, very, very strange. And it does, it's like, like, as soon as I listened to the single, I was like, oh, I know, yeah, I know what they're talking about. I also feel like that kind of music has had, like, a resurgence, because I feel like the Black Keys kind of do some stuff that's like in this vein. It is like soccer. I don't know. It's too late. I can't be articulate. Anyhow, I thought this was really cool, and I looked up Bova Rock and I found some cool music.
You know, people talk about pub rock, and honestly, like, I'm not even sure. I know that's a genre term people use, but no one seems to really know what pub rock is. You're like, what's pub rock? They're like, the 101ers. Well, who else is pub rock? The Small Faces. Well, who else is pub rock? The 101ers. Like, like, what is pub rock? You know? Anyways. Listen, here's something that's not pub rock. Halford. He's re-releasing. Well, actually, that's part of the trick. Halford's first solo album, which is called Resurrection by the band Halford, is being re-released, and it's not exactly sure who it's being really re-released through. Right now, I believe the only place that you can get it is in Brooklyn Vegan. It's being re-released on vinyl. The album was originally released in, I believe it was 2000, or maybe it was 2001, and that was the complete nadir of vinyl records. There was a very, very limited European pressing, which I got one, but for the most part, it was released on CD. So this is the first, I guess, readily available vinyl pressing of Halford's Resurrection. Resurrection is an incredibly important album because Halford left Judas Priest in 1992, I think, or maybe it was 91, or maybe it was even 93. It was after Painkiller, and that was kind of like, yet again, Priest's big comeback was the Painkiller album. Everyone was surprised when Halford quit. If you read Halford's autobiography, he's kind of vague about if and how he quit. I didn't really buy his story. I liked the book, though. So anyways, he formed the band Fight, which was kind of like another heavy metal band, but sort of influenced by Southern Trend Roadkill, Pantera. You know, sort of. They had like three really good songs and like nine okay ones. And then that band broke up. And then he had a industrial band called Two, which was not good. He tried, but it was just not. It was Halford trying to do like Marilyn Manson and Nine Inch Nails, and it wasn't that good. And so, meanwhile, Priest had the singer Tim Ripper Owens, who I talked about on the podcast like three episodes ago, and they put out two albums, which were okay, but you can't replace Halford. And so then Halford came out with his band Halford, which I think was definitely inspired by the name Danzig, you know, Danzig, Halford. And this was before the age of – I mean, the internet existed, but it was before the age of social media. And I remember me and my friend Tom McNamara went to the Trocadero to see Halford. This was before the record came out. And we're like, no, it might have been after the record. The CD probably just came out. And Judas Priest usually pays like 15, 20, 30,000 people. Trocadero was like 500 people, 300 people. So it was like Halford in like a super small place. And we're like, what's Halford going to do? And no one knew because YouTube wasn't a thing. Instagram wasn't a thing. Like it was kind of fun, you know? And so Halford comes out. He does the first two Halford tracks, which kick ass. He does the two best Fight tracks, which kick ass. Then he does, I think, maybe a Halford track, then like some Judas Priest tracks. And he just kept mixing up all night long. And it was one of the greatest concerts I've ever seen. And he sounded fantastic. So Halford is a very important record because, as we know now, thanks to Rob's book, the point of the Halford band was kind of for him to re-edition for Judas Priest and get back into Judas Priest. And he wanted to show the Judas Priest guys, well, I can kind of do it better than you're doing it right now. And poor Tim Ripper Owens, who Judas Priest, they asked him to be in the band. They kicked him out when they realized Halford wanted to come back. So I do have some sympathy for Tim Ripper Owens. It sucks, man. You know, and now he kind of hates Judas Priest, but he's forever tied to them, you know. So anyways, when this record was announced at Brooklyn Vegan – but the question is Halford hasn't said anything about this reissue. And where it gets trickier, in Halford's book, he mentioned this in like three sentences, and I really wish he went more into it. His manager, he sued his manager because his manager tried to take control of the Halford name and the entire Halford discography. And there's a very rare Halford Live CD called Halford Live in London, which is, it's almost a duplicate of the fantastic Halford Live Insurrection album. So like, why do they put it out? And Halford suggests that he didn't have anything to do with that, and his manager put out just to make a quick buck. And so Halford didn't mention this reissue at all. So who's putting it out? Does the manager own the Halford discography, or like who's putting this out? You think Halford was mentioning it. That being said, I actually went and bought one of these before I did the news at Punk News. I'm like, this is going to sell out instantaneously. I got to get one. You know, like wowee, Halford's album is back on double vinyl. You know, everyone's going to want one of these. Like, it's going to sell out in a second. I'm pretty sure I'm the only guy that bought one. Like, I'm like, oh. I'm like, no one seems to care about this record at all, which doubly surprised me. because this is like a legendary album in the realms of classic, you know, British heavy metal. It's like, it's Halford's big comeback. It's one of the few solo albums that is really fantastic. It really is. I don't know. M, how do you have any perspective on this, or am I just ranting about how much I like Halford and how awesome it was to see Halford before the internet and you didn't know what he was going to do and he just came out and blew everybody away?
The only thing that I really know about Halford, sadly, not the only thing, but I really know most of what I know about Halford just from the Adam and His Package song, hats off to Halford. So I think M is a lot more, ready to weigh in on this than I am.
Well, yeah, like I read the story and kind of looked into it, and then I got like, I just kind of went down the rabbit hole and I was listening to like the music. So, yeah, I have like this, for some reason I wrote a bunch of notes about his voice, and then I have Axl Rose wishes in all caps. So that was fun, but no, it's really good. It is interesting that he hasn't really endorsed it or said anything, about it, but it'll be interesting to see what comes out of it. Like, it would have to be, well, like, it's official, like, it's not,
it's not a bootleg.
Yeah, so it'll be interesting to see what comes out of it. Did he like come out on the motorbike in when you saw him?
He did at the Trocadero, a club of like 300, 400 people.
Oh, my God.
He probably drove all of about 4.5 feet on it. But like the crazy thing is, like, the whole place is mic'd up. So he comes out on this Harley and it goes, it like blew out everybody's eardrums because it's a tiny place to begin with. And everything's mic'd up and a Harley is super loud, you know. Man, it was awesome. It was so great. Oh, Halford rules, man. It was great. Like I'm sad that the youth will never get to experience. I have no idea what's going to happen. Like, you know, before you go see something, it's all over YouTube or, you know, whatever, Facebook or whatever. And it's like no one knew what was going to happen, and Halford just came out and destroyed the place, and it was thrilling. Anyways, here's another interesting reissue. The Rolling Stones are reissuing 1981's Tattoo You, one of their big comeback records. The new version of the record is remastered, and it has 9 bonus tracks, most of which are bootlegs that have been around for a while, but they've cleaned them up. And also, some of the bonus tracks weren't ever actually finished, so that the boys went back and actually put in some vocals and some guitars and some other things to kind of finish off never-released songs. I'm psyched. Tattoo You is one of their best albums. It's a fantastic rock album. It really is. I'm psyched. And, you know, listen, the Rolling Stones rock. And people can complain about me posting about the punk news, but I'm not going to stop, man. So there. Hallie Boy, any fond memories of Tattoo You or Not Your Style?
Rolling Stones are like punk as fuck. I'm totally into you writing about them on the site. Hang Fire is probably my favorite Stone song. So yeah, I'm totally into this reissue. I don't know. I just want to ask you every time you saw a band live, but this episode could be really long if I keep asking you that. How many times have you seen the Stones, John?
6.
That's great. That's great. See, I saw them on the Steel Wheels tour. I think that's the last time I saw them, but I would happily see them again. You know, I dated, this is another weird fact.
I dated Mick Jagger.
I dated a guy from Argentina for like a few years. And there's like a whole, maybe we've talked about this, John. Have we talked about the fact that there are rolingas in Argentina?
No, we've never talked about that.
So there's like the way we would think of like deadheads in this country, like the way deadheads are just like really like the Grateful Dead is like most of what they listen to. And they'll like spend their life just sort of like following the Dead around on tour, like where it's like really just this completely definitive thing about like their lifestyle, how they dress, what they choose to do. There is that for like Rolling Stone fans in Argentina. They all have mullets. They all try to wear their hair sort of like Mick Jagger did in like the like late 70s and early 80s. They all have mullets, and they like, and this guy that I dated if you asked him, like, oh, what kind of music are you into, dude? Like, most people will be like, oh, I really like jazz. Oh, I really, they'll give you like a genre. He would just be like, I like the Rolling Stones. Like, that's what, that's like all he listened to. It was like both a little bit like being tortured, because you just like, I like a lot of different kinds of music, and I don't want to just have to listen to one kind of music, let alone one band, like over and over and over again. But I will say, dating him, I just did definitely discover like a lot of Rolling Stones songs that I didn't previously know, because I hadn't like done like the deep dive, and stuff that I like really, really love. So that's a story about me and the Rolling Stones that no one asked for.
Listen, any Rolling Stones talk, I'm down for.
I think you should be a Rollinga. I think you need to grow out the mullet and like dress like Mick from back in the day. And just like that's, and be like, this is the only music I listen to. This is the definitive thing about my life. I am a Rolling Stones fan.
Honestly, like people like to diss on the Rolling Stones. Like if you watch those videos from the 70s and even like the early 80s, like they look so cool. They really,
fucking do.
And the cool thing about the Stones, like if you watch that, they didn't really fall into the 80s trap. Like a lot of bands got really bad in the 80s. The Rolling Stones put out some mediocre records in the 80s, especially Dirty Work. But like if you look at Tattoo You, Emotional Rescue, like they're leaning towards the new wave and punk thing, but not falling into it. But they're definitely not going to like bad 80s rock like a lot of 80s acts did, you know? And so it, like, they're the best, man. They're the coolest.
Yeah, but didn't they do one video where they're like he's like dancing around with a cartoon cat in the 80s? That was pretty bad.
That is a cover, I would call it Harlem Shuffle.
Okay, thank you. Okay. And actually, I don't mind that song. It's just the video was like really bad. It was bad in like a really bad 80s way.
Or there's the other famous song that featured a dancing cartoon cat. Do you know what song that is, Halle Bullet?
Another song with a dancing cartoon cat. No, I can't think.
Paula Abdul's Opposites Attract.
Oh, you know what? I'm so disappointed in myself. I should have known that. Yes. Okay.
Anyways, welcome back to Old and Goldies AM. And next we're going to play Tommy James and the Shondells. Tommy James and the Shondells were all the racket in 1959. Now, all right, listen. The Cure. Let's get another hip new band. Everyone's talking about The Cure. This is quite shocking Cure news if you're into The Cure, which I do enjoy The Cure a lot. I've got a lot of their deluxe reissues. Simon Gallup is leaving the band. He's been in the band since 1979, and basically there was only a short break between 82 and 84 when he wasn't in. So essentially he's been in there since the start. He's leaving the band. And also, he put in, like, a weird statement, and he said that, I'm okay, I just got fed up of all the betrayal, which he didn't clarify what that meant. And more, is The Cure party over? Will The Cure ever be the same? And what's the betrayal? How could Simon have been betrayed by Robert Smith? Isn't that what like, every Cure song is about, being betrayed by the girl you like, you know, or not being able to get the girl you like? Isn't that every single Cure song? Except for The Cure, sometimes they have happy songs, which is why The Cure is the second best goth band. Friday, I'm in Love, a beautiful, happy song. Mint Car, great song. And that's because that's what makes Cure the second best goth band, if you say that Cure is a goth band. And more, what's going on with The Cure? What's the inside deal? I'm sure you have all the inside info.
Yeah, I have the scoop. I want to know what the betrayal is.
And me too.
I really want to know. Like, this is where it's like, please just post everything, you know? Just, like, I want the details. But then it's like, Robert Smith did an interview recently where he said that the Cure album they're working on now is going to be the last one, and there's some really heavy emotional stuff on it. So it's like, does that have to do with like Simon Gallup leaving? Is that like, has he been out of the band for a while and just made it public, or like what's gone on kind of thing? So yeah, and then there was another interview from 2018 where Robert Smith said, if Simon ever left the band, it wouldn't be called The Cure. So now it's like, what are they going to do? Like, are they going to change their name? Are they just going to release their last album? Are they not going to release their last album? Are they just going to, you know, hang out and kind of ride into the sunset, because they're leaving it off on number 13, which is pretty goth, you know, when you think about it.
Mm-hmm.
So
I actually have to add, I was wrong. He's not an original member. He was not on Three Imaginary Boys.
Mm-mm. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm like upset by this news in that I like love The Cure. The Cure like totally changed my life. But like I'm upset by it mostly because it's like they did say they're putting out their last album. They are old. It like the band is definitely winding down. It just sort of seems like such a shame. Like you couldn't just like get along for like what? Like what are we talking about even? Like you couldn't get along for like another year or like even like not get along, but just like just finish out the band. Like he like they were just whatever was going on was so bad that he just like couldn't even just hang on for like a little while longer. I find that sad. And like, and I also am, I like found, I was seeing some quotes like what you found. Like I saw a quote from Robert Smith where he was talking about Simon and he was like, he's always been my best friend. He said, like, yeah. We've had some difficult periods over the years, but we've managed to maintain a very strong friendship that grew out of that shared experience from when we were teens. When you have friends like that, particularly for that long, it would take something really extraordinary for that friendship to break. So, like, when I read that, I was like, oh, like, no, it just like sounds painful. I do think it's funny that in the same episode, we have both, like, pondered, like, whether people like share too much information when they're explaining why they're leaving a band, but we're also like complaining about this one. We're like, we want to know what the betrayal is. I want to know every single detail of the betrayal. Why is Simon not like dishing the dirt? Yeah, I don't know. This bums me out. This bums me out. You just sort of feel like, oh, you're older. Like your band is winding down. Just like figure out a way to like wrap it up in a way that feels good to everybody, right? Like don't for things to wrap up like this seems painful for everybody involved.
Well listen, sometimes you just gotta be like just hang in there for four more weeks or a year, you know. But you know, let's talk about something that is awesome, and if Hallie and Em don't say it's awesome, then I'm ending the podcast and we're never coming back. You, Roy, legendary Jamaican toaster, arguably the first Jamaican toaster, and thereby arguably the first rapper. Who's to say? No one really knows. Anyway, he's putting out a new album. It's called Solid Gold. It's got a lot of guests on it. It's got Santee Gold, Ziggy Marley, Shaggy, David Hines, Richie Spice, Tarris Riley, Rygin King, Sly and Robbie, and a couple of other people. And also Mick Jones, and not of the Clash, of course. And of course, not only is Mick Jones of the Clash on the album, he's on the closing track with Big Youth. And that track is You, Roy, Big Youth, Mick Jones. And the track is called Every Knee Shall Bow. And it is a massive 15-minute track. And the flip side of the record is a 15-minute dub version of that same track. And it is killer. It is killer. You, Roy, sounds like You, Roy, that big, heavy, gruff voice. The track, it's not like a prog song. It's basically the same beat, more or less. But it is a super rootsy, super modern rootsy song with heavy drums, heavy bass, and kind of, you know, Horns of Jericho. And Big Youth is chatting. You, Roy's chatting, and I guess Mick Jones is playing the guitar. I listened a bunch. I couldn't hear his voice, so I'm guessing he's on guitar. At any rate, this track is amazing. It's awesome. I'm going to buy the vinyl just so I can play this one track in its 15-minute form on my record player and just shake the room, man. This rock. Hallie Bullitt, 9 out of 10 or 10 out of 10?
Yeah, I mean...
Ah!
No, come on. No, like I can't, like 10 out of 10. I don't know. I have to reserve that for.
No,
like,
it's, honestly, it's not a 10
out of 10. 9 out of 10.
It's an 8 or 9, honestly, but it rocks. It rocks.
Yeah, no, it totally rocks. It totally rocks. And I feel like we're seeing more of this with like just people. I don't know. Am I making this up? I feel like we're seeing more of this with like big names like collaborating with each other and like newer artists paying tribute to older artists in this way that's like everyone's just like making music together. And I feel like that's happened more since the pandemic hit. I don't know if it's that people are not on tour and so they are in the studio and able to like lend their talents to other people's like recorded projects a little bit more. Like, is that just my perception or do you feel like you guys feel like there's more of that happening right now?
That's a good question. I hadn't considered it. I'll have to think about that one.
Mm-hmm. Anyhow, I think this is great. I think this is cool. M, tell us you're so against this. You just like hate everything about it.
Yeah, the rant begins now. Well, just before I get into the song, yeah, I do think there's been a few more collaborations, like with COVID, with people like you wouldn't necessarily think. So I agree with your point. So this song went by really fast. It was really long, but it went by really fast. I thought it was really good. His voice is just great. And then the confidence in it too, you know, like the whole thing is just, you know, like it's well earned and he knows he's great and he's, you know, at the, like on his game and stuff. So, yeah, it was good.
I'm like getting, okay, so we've learned about M in this episode that like if she likes things, it feels like the song goes by fast. And if she's like not so sure she's into it, the song seems to drag on. So I feel like M, you should have like a new scale by which you like grade songs where you're like, this felt like a 1 minute song and that's like the best rating you could possibly give something. And you're like, and it could go all the way to, I don't know, it could go all the way to 30. Like this piece of shit song felt like it lasted for 30 minutes because I hated it so much.
No, that's a great idea. I have listened to a 30 minute song. It's just an aside. It's a Slipknot song. And it's one of their early ones, and it's a good 30 minutes.
Oh my God.
It's really good.
Well, this has been a good 60 minutes at the Punk News Podcast for sure. Hallie Bullet, why don't you play a song and we'll come back and we'll wrap this one up.
Okay, so I told you, I'm probably not even saying it right. Someone has to write in and tell me what the fuck is going on with this genre of music that I've never heard of before. I went down this very little hole into looking into Bava Rock or Bova Rock or whatever it is. And I don't know, I found this song that I liked. I guess this is considered like one of the definitive bands of this scene. This band Hector. Do you know Hector, John?
I do not. No.
Okay, good. I was like so sure you were going to be like, yeah, I love this shit. Yeah, so anyhow, maybe this is like a lost classic that people would be into. This song is called Wired Up. Hector put it out, it looks like, in 1973. I'm looking at the album title just here on the. This can't be right. It's so late, you guys. Why does it say here on YouTube that the album is called Boobs? : The Junk Shop Glam Discotheque. According to YouTube, that's the album title. I should have researched this a little better. I hope that's correct. Anyhow, yeah, this is Wired Up by Hector.
Knock out, knock out. Heads looks and warrants, heads drinking gin, thinking.
And that was Hector doing Wired Up. Listen, people, it's been a good 60 minutes. How do you pull it? Any closing words that you think a listener should know about or anything like that?
Boobs.